Hello, everyone. This is Greg, your host of Goddamn GameCube. Welcome to Season 3. If you enjoy listening to our show, consider subscribing to us on YouTube for exclusive video content. Thank you and enjoy today's episode. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Beppy are your hosts today, and we are going to be talking about the Metro trilogy. I'm kind of excited to talk about this one. A game, you know, I didn't think we would be talking about, a franchise I wasn't sure if we were going to cover. We have our friend Nick Monahan is here with us as well. Thank you for joining us, Nick. How
Absolutely.
Are you?
I'm fantastic. It's great to be back.
Thank you for joining us. Beppy, why don't you take it? Let's go for it.
Yes, for sure. Pretty funny because this series, I frequently saw it in like the bargain bin at Walmart.
Yeah.
So I never knew, like, I'm like, is this good? Is this like, why is this always like so cheap or affordable, I should say? But as it turns out, it's actually quite good. This was a Game Pass find for me, I believe. And it's based on a book series, which Nick and I have now completed. Mm-hmm. You have not. I just wanted to establish how they kind of line up really quick. So 2033 is the first game, and it more or less follows the first book, if I remember correctly. The game adds a lot more kind of twists and turns and some interesting stuff that happens, which is pretty cool.
There's a lot more violence in the game too, because it's a video game.
Yes, for sure.
I think our team kills one person in the course of 2033.
Yeah. 34 is kind of a side story, interestingly enough, about a character called Homer. And just it's a lot of like world building and just kind of background stuff going on in the stations. And then 2035 pretty much serves as the inspiration for the beginning of the third game.
Okay.
And that's where kind of the overlap begins and ends. And it's pretty interesting that, I mean, the author, Glukowski, he supervised the story for all of them, I believe. But it's kind of interesting that the story took on a life of its own that way. Do you have any, Nick, do you have any kind of... Besides the ultra violence in the first one compared to the first book, do you have any comments about comparing the books to the games?
The books are a lot more, depressing,
sure.
Especially 2035. RTM gets the literal and metaphorical shit kicked out of them in 2035, especially. But they are, very, very like, you know, Russian apocalypse style,
very bleak,
very bleak
worldview,
but there are like glimmers of hope in there, and there's just some really interesting philosophical things that it grapples with,
some cool imagery, descriptions.
Yeah, there's not a lot of action in them. It's very much concerned with the world building and kind of just telling this story and telling these characters and creating this world under Moscow.
Absolutely.
Other than that, I mean, there's characters that are established in the books that are in the games, like Colonel Miller and Anna, and most of the Rangers are represented in some way.
Yep. And they're just called Stalkers in the books, right?
Instead of the mostly. Rangers? The Rangers are a very specific, small set of soldiers that are kind of, they're apolitical. That's
right.
Kind of their whole thing, is that they are not allied with any one organization, although you find out that that's not quite the case.
I was trying to explain to Nick, your brother Nick, about how they're kind of like the Game of Thrones Night's Watch, kind of like neutral party, like just kind of keeping an eye. We should probably get into the premise of this trilogy. It is post-apocalyptic Russia. I can't remember how long after.
Is it 20 years?
In the game's fiction, it was 2013
okay.
when the nuclear war happened. It's been 20 years.
Right. Mm-hmm. And everyone is living in the metro tunnels. And it's kind of, they give a lot of character and kind of, there's factions that develop along the different stations. They control different subsets. It's a very kind of involved world for having so few like games and books. Like, it's very well developed, yeah. Well thought out.
And Dmitry Glukhovsky as well has been very, very supportive of the fan community, and he has essentially canonized a lot of fan fiction.
That's right.
That has written about like what's going on in other parts of the world, because it's not just the Moscow Metro that has human survivors. There's people all over the place in different metros, bunkers, other places. The fan fiction is quite extensive, and a lot of it has been canonized by Glukhovsky.
Yeah. So we're pretty much just going to do all three games in this episode. We're going to dedicate a certain amount of time to each of them, starting with the first one, as you would. I wasn't sure. I was actually just showing your brother, Nick, again. I was showing him a little bit of the beginning of the first one, and I wasn't sure about it because it kind of it's basically one of those flash forward beginnings where it shows you the end of the story.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Like, where am I? What am I doing? But pretty soon after, it kind of, it's like 8 days earlier. And I think that I was re-examining this, like this, the narrative of this game. It's such a brilliant, like, hero's journey kind of thing where you live in this station and your adopted father, his best buddy, comes back and essentially gives you your quest in terms of, like, he belongs to the Rangers, this elite organization, and he's going to go investigate something. And he says, if I don't come back, then you have to come and warn them or whatever. It's just a fantastic premise. It starts, like, very simple. And not only that, but it hits all those beats that, like, you would expect to see and in like a Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or something like that, where the young protagonist is going to go off on his own, and it, your character develops through these experiences in a very believable and well-paced way. So I wanted to kind of explore some of those, especially when it comes to the first game, in terms of how you're very like incapable at first and you're getting into trouble a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any early memories of that part of the game? Because I was going to point out that the first kind of settlement that you go to, you can get robbed by a prostitute.
I don't remember that.
It's just like, it's an optional thing that can happen if you because their currency in this series is cartridges.
Yeah.
Military grade weapons cartridges, which is, I thought it was fascinating.
And that's a change from the novels too, because in the novels it's just ammo. Like,
right.
Any ammo,
mm-hmm.
which made it so that, like, if you spent, say, an AK magazine for food, that's 30 rounds you don't have to shoot at stuff.
Mm-hmm. It makes Whereas more sense this, than bottle caps. I gotta give it that.
Yeah, well, because it takes something that is directly useful rather than something that only has value because somebody says it does.
I've seen a lot of people theorize about, like, if the world ends, what are we going to use for currency?
And Beppy, like, what did you say off mic a couple, like, right before we started recording this? What is Metro to you? You called it, like, if Fallout had, like,
had more integrity.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more relevant now than it was a while ago, but...
I just think nobody does post-apocalyptic fiction better than the Russians.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. Honestly, they know all about it.
I mean, I was gonna say, like, a quick point on, like, the you use bullets as money mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I remember from the first game, I'm not trying to make smaller how cool that was. I just never did it. Like, I always felt like the worst bullets that you could not use as money were fine. I never shot money at enemies. I always used it as money.
Couldn't you shoot?
So in that game, they delineated the military grade ammunition was more powerful and it would set people on fire.
Yeah.
Which was really silly. Just so you know, standard issue military ammunition does not set people on fire. But so it was. The 2033, the original, before the Redux, I believe, had a lot less ammunition overall, especially if you played the other difficulties,
mm-hmm.
Like the Ranger and Ranger Hardcore and stuff like that. So that became a lot more... you had to think about it a little more. And also, there's a point of no return where there's, like, the last merchant... And so it's like you either just spend all your military grade ammo there, because at that point it's just going to become better ammo.
Yeah.
And it's not money anymore.
Yeah. And I did think that was something else, is that there's a lot of cool kind of like weapons in these games that they clearly made themselves, and it looks awesome. Very kind of rustic. There's those pneumatic ones later on. It's just a lot of like just nonverbal world building. But again, like in that first kind of settlement, you meet like the shady contact who gets you into some trouble. Bourbon, I think his name is.
Bourbon's one of my favorite just like side characters in anything.
Yeah, he's great, and he kind of gets you. It's kind of, it kicks the training wheels off little by little, and like, okay, well now you're starting out and you're with your civilization, and then you kind of go off on your own and meet some wholesome people and then some not so wholesome people, and then you're in the shit before you know it. I thought it was really, like, one of my favorite characters was Khan, introduced in this game, kind of a spiritual guy who guides you through certain sections of the game. And how did you guys feel about the more sort of supernatural elements of this series?
You're talking about the dark ones and that sort of stuff?
Like the ghosts or the memories, like the darkness, that kind of thing.
I actually had some notes written down about that. When I first played Metro 2033, that was the part of the game that actually confused me a little. Because maybe you guys can explain it a little better. Also, you guys read the books. I didn't. I'm assuming all the supernatural psychic stuff is in the books.
Yes, yeah. Even more so, honestly.
Okay, yeah. Like, what kind of... I'm not saying it turned me off. I was a little confused by, like... They kind of explain it later, but, like, does Artyom have these psychic visions? Can other characters see them? Is it just in your brain? Are they actually physical? I didn't understand.
I think some of the implication is that these happen in radiation hotspots.
Yeah, okay.
And some of it is your perception altered. Some of it is like, is there lingering energy? Like, there's a ghost train and a ghost like plane crash at one point, I believe. And it's kind of, is your perception more heightened? Are you more aware of what happened there? Or is your mind like fucked by the radiation?
Sure.
There's actually a really cool thing. And the books... In terms of lore, the books and the games have kind of dovetailed in my brain now. So I apologize if I don't remember which one it's from.
It's easy to
But it is heavily implied in the lore in general that the nuclear war was so devastating that heaven and hell no longer exist.
Okay.
And so all of the souls that should be there are now just existing in the world.
Okay.
And that is part of the supernatural elements. In the book, and I forget if they don't really explain it in the game, but in the book also... There is like a psychic bioweapon under the Kremlin that if you look at the Kremlin towers outside for too long, you will basically be mind controlled to go there and be killed by this bioweapon.
That's so cool.
Wow.
You will like literally just kind of snap and just be there all of a sudden.
They describe it in the book, and it's pretty scary. And there's something similar in D6 in the game.
Yes.
Which is pretty bizarre. But I did want to, before we get too far, around the halfway point, you are sneaking through, as I mentioned, there's different factions warring for control of the Metro. And my favorite part of this first game is when you have to sneak by both lines on like a bridge underground. It's so intense because you're sneaking past the Red Line, the communists, and the Nazis are on the other side of the bridge. And you have to make it by both of them. Ideally undetected.
But there's achievement for getting through without killing anybody or alerting anybody, and I fucking got it somehow.
Yeah.
It's so insane.
I did want
on my first try.
I did want to bring up, I think it's a good time, something that surprised me about Metro 2033 in terms of the gameplay. I didn't realize how much of a stealth game it was going to be, especially in these set pieces where you... like you were just describing, it's ideal if you go through undetected by both sides. Because we'll probably talk about it, but there's a big aspect of morality in this game that's actually hidden. There are no like morality meters, or there isn't any karma like fallout, but there is. But it's all... There's no... There's no like graphic interface for it. It doesn't tell you have Paragon or Renegade points,
yeah,
but it does exist.
There's there's one indicator, and it's like a water drop noise and like, yes, a little flash on the screen.
Yeah.
And that tells you that you've done like a moral choice.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Interesting.
But there's no indicator if you've done something bad.
Maybe, yeah, like my one kind of gripe with all three of the games is how the morality system is handled one way or another, because it's very subtle, and it's you get moral points for like watching circus acts and stuff.
Yeah,
and well, like, because not necessarily doing good deeds.
I think Exodus does it the best out of the three, and I'll tell you why when we get to that game, for me specifically. But I think in general, it's not so much a BioWare, and I don't want to pick on BioWare, but like BioWare is famous for their sort of binary moral choice systems, yeah, and everything, and their karma systems. And Metro isn't so much concerned with like good or evil. It's more concerned with like your humanity.
I was about to say, it's like humanism.
Yeah, yeah. So like if you're engaging with the social thing, so like you watch a show at one of the, you know, one of the more lively stations, or you encounter a non-hostile but sort of like aggressive mutant that's like protecting its den or its young or something. Mm-hmm. If you don't engage it and you move away, you'll get a point, because it's like you don't need to kill this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then of course just don't stealth kill enemies that haven't seen you and stuff like that. So it's more just kind of like gauging your humanity. And there is one thing that I like about these games in general, and this ties into it though with this morality system, is that almost everything in this series is diegetic.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is that you are being judged by something rather than just like the developers just put this in there.
Yes.
Because the Dark Ones are watching you, especially more in Last Light.
Yeah.
But like there is a sort of, you do feel like you're being judged by someone or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also just kind of like the karmic, there's actually a system of karma, and with the supernatural elements of the game, it feels like it works.
Maybe we should just mention that early on the Dark Ones are introduced. How would you like describe these creatures?
I was going to say that it's kind of leading into what confused me, and maybe you guys can clear it up a little bit. It's also been a while since my first playthrough. I'm trying to really remember my initial experience. What I brought it up a little before, what I did not understand is when this stuff is introduced, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong here, there, when you get towards the end of the game, there's sort of a mission where you're supposed to blow them up or destroy a Dark One's den.
Yeah.
But that made me pause. I'm like, so are they not psychic? Are they a physical being that you can blow up?
Yes.
Do other people see them? Can you touch them? I don't understand.
I mean, do you want me to just kind of like tell you what their deal is?
Yeah, you might as well.
So their deal is that the reason that RTM can interact with them in a meaningful way is because he had an encounter with them as a child.
Yeah.
They saved him from the rats.
Yes. So when he was a child, not too long after everybody hunkered in the Metro, because he was alive when it happened. He was a baby, but he was alive when it happened. So when he was a young child, he was playing near one of the airlocks that goes to the surface, and a Dark One saved him and kind of like psychically linked with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is able to actually interact with them. So the Dark Ones, they don't speak. They communicate telepathically, but what's happening is that whenever they try to telepathically communicate with a human, it kills them because most humans can't handle it.
Ah.
And so humans interpret that as an attack. And so that the entire game, the entire premise of 2033 is the Rangers are trying to kill the Dark Ones because they think they're trying to invade.
It's just like based on a misunderstanding.
But they're really just trying to make contact.
They're trying to make contact because what it is they're actually the next evolution of humanity.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They're like the next evolution of us.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're trying to make peace.
I also didn't expect that from this game either when it gets very supernaturally. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that was going to happen either.
So the Dark Ones are physical beings.
Okay. And it's very trippy. When you get into that, I didn't want to quite get into the end game just yet because I wanted to bring up the librarians.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's a great part where you have to go into their national library or whatever and find plans for the nuclear or launch system or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the librarians are mentioned in the book too. And they're just these horrifying giant beasts that lurk in the library.
Are those the big monkey guys? Is that what you're talking about? Am I wrong?
Those are the guys.
Sort of. They're kind of Fallout-y.
Okay.
Like just big mutants.
Okay.
And
they're kind of like hairless apes almost, but very tall and lanky.
Yeah.
You gotta like sneak by them, mm-hmm. and it was a huge highlight of that game for me because I thought I had seen everything by that point. And I was like, oh, shit.
You can stare them down, too, because the idea is that they won't attack you as long as you look at them, as long as you don't get too close.
That was really interesting.
The original game, it's kind of finicky, the mechanic is, but in Redux, it's a lot better.
Okay.
And I just want to say, too, they're fucking terrifying in the book.
Yeah.
Because they do encounter them in the book, and it's... There's just this one part that's really gnarly that I want to mention really quick where his companion, so he's gone in there with this like acolyte guy who's like a scholar, and RTM is in there with him to look for this thing that they're looking for, and he loses track of him, and then he hears like this moaning, this like pained moaning, and he goes and he finds him, and this
never a good sign.
This like acolyte dude or whatever is just kind of laying on the ground, and the librarian has its hand in his like innards and is just kind of playing with him, making him make noises just out of pure curiosity, just kind of like, oh,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's fucking horrifying.
Okay.
Sometimes you gotta mess around, you know, see what
Jesus
happens.
Christ.
We do keep mentioning original versus Redux, so Nick, did you want to kind of delineate between those two versions a little bit?
Yeah, I'm probably going to get some of this wrong and people are going to scream at me from from their headphones and stuff, but so the original game was overall much more focused on like atmosphere and sort of more survival horror.
Yep.
The stealth was a lot more unforgiving. The enemies actually behaved like human beings. They didn't just forget that you were there 5 seconds after you killed somebody. Basically, if you alerted an encounter, you were gonna have to get through that encounter that way. You could still sneak around them and not let them see you, but they were very aware once you triggered them. And a lot of people don't like that. They're more used to, like, you know, modern games where it's like enemies have goldfish memory or whatever, but which is how they did it in Redux, because they updated it to be more like Last Light. That was basically the intent with the Redux version of 2033, was to make it more like the original Last Light. And then Last Light Redux just kind of like messed with some graphics, I think, mainly polishes it. But the models look different in Redux, and I think a lot of them look worse. The lighting is a lot brighter and just kind of like weirder. It loses a lot of that oppressive tone and a lot of that like bleakness that I think gives the game more character, because a lot of the time you hear people talk about like, oh, brown and gray, blah, 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 but it actually adds to the atmosphere of the original game, and I think Redux takes some of that away.
Got it.
It's so funny because I played the Redux version and I had a great time, and one of our friends played the original version. He's like, yeah, I wasn't a fan of that.
The original is much more slob jank, too.
I guess it's like it matters if you had played it first or when it came out or whatever.
I didn't play the Redux at all. I only played the original.
Yeah?
So, yeah.
What was your overall impression of the original?
The original?
Yeah.
I was very surprised, like I said, how much of a stealth game it was. I didn't know, like... Do you know what's so funny? There was another game that I believe came out at the same time that had a similar setting and similar monsters, but it was terrible. Do you guys remember that? It had something to do with like opening Pandora's box and there are a bunch of monsters. What game was that? You know what I mean? Do you
Legendary.
That? Thank you.
Yeah.
So I remember people were saying, oh, you're talking about Legendary? No, I'm talking about this weird game, Metro 2033, that has a similar setting and similar monsters, but it's way better.
Yeah, right.
I didn't expect this game to be as supernatural and as interesting, was kind of my main takeaway.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be more like boom, boom, crunch, crunch, pump fest, but not exactly.
Yeah,
but
for Becky, sure.
Keep going.
No, I just I wanted to wrap kind of my thoughts on this first game especially. Basically, the ending, the bad ending is canon, which is interesting, which is kind of setting the stage for the next one, wherein you decide to bomb the Dark Ones.
Yeah.
Pretty cool the way that they handled this. I guess the good ending is just that you don't. I never watched that.
Yeah, I think the good ending, if I remember correctly, is you get up to the top and then the Dark Ones are able to actually contact you and say, hey, don't fucking kill us. We mean you no harm.
And that's like the end of the series.
And then RTM's like, oh. Because RTM, I think, has the designator that's going to guide the missiles.
Yeah.
So he's the one who gets to decide if they go or not. And if you get the good ending, which just happens automatically if you have enough karma points, which is really hard to do if you don't know that there's a karma system.
Exactly.
Which is why the bad ending is canon.
Right.
He just doesn't do it.
Right.
I was going to say, have we encountered many games where the bad ending is the canon?
I can't
not
think of any
off really.
Top, off the top of my head, no, I can't.
I was
think
gonna.
Of any.
You brought up a point that I echo, where I think because the karma system is so in the back and it's really hard to get the good ending. I think that's why they made the bad ending canon.
Yeah.
Where, hey, you went out, you completed your mission, but hey, maybe you shouldn't have.
Yeah.
It makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like we always see now, you know what's so interesting about this game too? I feel like I really appreciate games that kind of do like, hey, Greg, we got you. Because yeah. I always consider myself to be very good at games and very like, I'm always going to get the best ending. I'm always the shit. I'm always going to play it at 100%. But with a game like Metro, I got the bad ending the first time because I didn't know the morality system existed. I had no idea. Yep. And it's interesting how I think the developers maybe assumed a lot of players would play like that. And it almost like if you didn't read the books, there's even more intrigue is my take, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, a really good way to sum it up is that they, like, you are the bad guy in that, kind of, and that's okay, because that is what they're trying to show you.
And you're learning.
And just the point of the story,
yeah,
really.
And the thing is you can play your way out of it, but only if you kind of game the system almost. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe like a repeat playthrough would have been like okay, I know what I'm doing this time. That's I
almost feel like the
it.
Good ending is not a good ending. It's the alternative ending at the end of the DVD.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, unless you guys have anything else to add, I think I'm ready to move on to Last Light.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, so the second one, probably my least favorite of the three, but
sure.
still yeah. a lot that I like about it.
Mm, for sure.
The story, as I mentioned, was guided by Dmitry Glukhovsky. And I was going to bring this up in the last one, but I believe this was where it was initially implemented, was all the little details and all the little commands that you can do with all your gear.
I believe so, yeah.
There's a button to wipe the water or blood off of your mask.
Mm-hmm.
You can check your wristwatch. There's the lighter. All these different gadgets that aren't on the screen at all times, which is key because it's not like distracting or overwhelming.
Sure.
You can just check them if you want. I love that.
That goes back to what I said about everything being diegetic. And
yeah.
That's why I love
your battery.
This.
The HUD is very minimal.
Yeah. Definitely. You can almost, I still don't quite like the Ranger Hardcore, I think, or whatever it is, where it turns your HUD completely off.
Right.
Because then you don't know how much ammo you have and there's no way to check, which like you would know that as the character.
Sure.
So like there should be a little number that tells you, but, they get even more into this in Exodus, which I'll talk about.
Or you could do the King Kong tie-in game where
there's
a button that where he says how many bullets he has.
Which is really cool. That game is underrated.
Yeah.
Pretty good, right?
You've got the lighter, you've got the map board, the objective thing and all that stuff.
I always thought that was neat. I don't even think we brought this up. What I think is cool about Metro is like you have to have air filters and you have to be able to breathe out in the post-apocalyptic wilderness.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to change your filters and your mask can't break or else you have to repair it,
yes.
which I thought was really cool.
And you can only repair it so many times.
And they do, I think, an even better job as the series goes on.
Agreed.
I felt like in the first game, I just never really had to do it because the levels ended so fast.
Yeah.
But in the second and third game, you really had to make sure you were on top of it, which I thought was cool.
It's a lot more longer missions, a lot more time on the surface.
Yeah.
As you go on. So I guess I should just start off with the premise of this one, which is that one of the Dark Ones survived, a
baby
child,
one. Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of dispatched to go find it because Khan, who I mentioned, the spiritual guy, mentions, you know, like he's like, this is your opportunity to right the wrong. And you're kind of at this crossroads in this game, which I thought was really interesting. And they introduce who will become the love interest in this game, Anna.
Yes. Yep.
Miller's daughter.
Yep. Colonel Miller, the leader of the Rangers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And a good character introduction. You kind of have a playful rivalry, I guess you would call it. And you're kind of chasing down this Rogue One. And you get separated, and of course, all these things happen. And this was, I thought this was awesome when you get captured by the Nazis in this one, and you see the Fuhrer very briefly, and it's his only appearance in this whole thing. I'm like, wow, there he is. It's just like pretty much exactly what I'd anticipate. And it's like so fascinating that their motivation is like crushing like mutants and like.
Yeah.
It's so like it's so well considered.
They did it way better than the new Wolfensteins.
Don't get me started, baby.
Yeah.
And then they introduce this character that Nick and I were talking about off mic, which is a fascinating character, Pavel.
Yeah.
Who has also been captured by the Nazis, and you escape together. and he seems like a pretty cool guy. He seems like you know, oh, he's a nice little companion. You find out he belongs to the Reds, and once you regroup with them, he turns on you, and it's such a cool dynamic.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of, like, is there a movie that comes to mind where with a character like this?
Not a movie, but I'm going to go really niche for 2 seconds here, because I've been playing through them again recently. The Ace Combat series.
Oh, yeah.
There's a very famous character in Ace Combat Zero, which was a prequel to Five. His call sign is Pixie. He's your buddy. He's your partner in that game. Uh-huh. He's your only wingman. And he betrays you halfway through the game in a pretty memorable little sequence. Mm-hmm. And then you have to fight him at the end of the game. He's the final boss. And Pavel kind of reminds me of that because he's this very jovial, cool character who's got all these like fun moments and fun lines and shit. And then he just turns on you. And
It's like patches in the Souls games. If they had spent a good amount of time like building up his character as a nice guy, it's so fascinating because you kind of like have run-ins with him over the course of the game, and it's like it's such a great way to play with your expectations. A very worthwhile antagonist.
Yeah, one of the major moral points is whether you save him or not. Whether you spare him, rather, or not.
Sure, yeah.
Because you have a final duel with him, and then you have him dead to rights, and you can either kill him or not.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool to be judged for that, I guess, one way or another. One of my favorite parts of this story is when you go to Venice. Do you remember this part? It's so cool because it's like a sewer line, I guess, and it's everything is the reason they call it Venice is it's all on rafts and whatnot. And there's these giant shrimp come out to attack you.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
And I don't think I have since.
No.
That was an excellent part. Do you have any like story highlights in Last Light that you're thinking about besides the ending, which we'll get
to? I mean, obviously I do like all of the just all of the character moments with, you know, with Pavel and then, you know, building the relationship with Anna. Who, you know, is kind of a more prickly character in this one and you know, she's a bit more of a rival, which is like a big contrast to, you know, when they're together in Exodus and she's a lot more warm and inviting and kind of more fun, I guess.
Yeah. She's kind of like testing you out, you know, kind of playing with you a little bit, which was cool. I wanted to just talk about also that there's a lot more, I mentioned a lot more surface time, but it reminded me a lot of Half-Life 2, and I found out that was on purpose. I'm like, well, you did it. Like, it reminds me a ton of that kind of atmosphere and environment, and it's a pretty impressive how, because you consider how short like the levels in the original game were, and you kind of get a lot more free reign in that one big swamp level. Really cool, really inventive
stuff.
Yeah,
when your objective is just to get to the church.
Yeah, exactly. And they really don't give you a clear path through. Yeah. Like, and there's missable stuff.
And you can just keep falling into the water and stuff. And like, you feel almost clumsy sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you get like a finite amount of times you can fall into the water before a shrimp just eats you.
Because you have like, in the first game, you have your classic arc of starting out as this noob from like whatever station. And then at the end, you become a fully fledged ranger and whatever. And then it's kind of how do you make the character feel vulnerable again for the second one? And I think they do a great job of that because it's so many stuff, so many things that you didn't see the first time around that kind of like knocks you back on your heels. And it's just kind of overall, I consider it a not quite successful sequel. Like it's good. It's very good and I would recommend it, but I feel like it was a little bit of a letdown after the first one. Probably, like I mentioned, least favorite of the three. Did you guys, like, how does it stack up for you guys?
For me, I was trying to recall, like, what I thought when I first played it. To me, it kind of felt like one of those sequels where the gameplay is a little bit better, but I wasn't as intrigued by the intrigue. You know what I mean? The first one is just, I feel like I have a bigger attachment to the first one for how unexpected and strange like the story moments are with all the psychic stuff. It's more of a stealth game, which I didn't expect. Two is more of like mechanically better. It's almost like what I tend to make fun of with BioWare games or sure. stuff like that. It's like mechanically better, but I don't like the story as much.
Yeah.
So I actually don't have a lot to say about the second one other than the it plays like a smoother experience. Yeah. Nick, I don't know if you have more detail than
it's
me.
Hard to talk
I really
about,
don't.
It's hard to talk about Last Light in any way other than that it just adds to the combat a lot more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They change out how the weapons work a little bit. And, you know, they've added... just like a few more ways to engage mechanically with the gameplay systems and
narratively, I would say like getting you involved in like, oh, this guy betrayed me. And then when you're chasing him and it's like,
yeah,
it's yeah, that's
it,
cool.
It is a more character driven, I feel like, and like personal story. Whereas with 2033, RTM is just kind of, he's being led around by these other characters occasionally and stuff, but it's mostly just you exploring this world kind of by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If not literally, then at least metaphorically, you're kind of just learning this mm-hmm. stuff. Last Light is like, okay, now that you know how to exist as a character in this world, we're going to up the ante combat-wise, because now you're a ranger, now you're expected to be able to fight, so we're going to make the fighting harder, and we're going to make the, well, not harder, harder on the character, not on the player.
Sure.
Because you are much more capable in Last Light as a fighter. And the weapons just get better. You get more modifications. You can get like night vision scopes. Well, there were night vision scopes in the first one, but like you get quicker access to a larger arsenal yeah. in this one.
Mm-hmm. Just a lot more expansion, and it's kind of, I guess, what you'd expect from a sequel, where it's like, let's just kind of build upon the original mm-hmm. in a lot yeah. of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I did really enjoy, as you're getting into like the final battle, we haven't really talked much about the story, and that it's kind of all about people. Everybody wants the one Dark One survivor,
mm-hmm.
and everybody wants D6, which is the silo you found in the last one. And I thought it was really cool that location became so important once the cat was out of the bag, I guess. And like all these different factions are converging on it, and this is the only one that ends with like a climactic like final battle, and
yeah.
it's awesome.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's like really blows the doors off. Like, I think the first intrusion is it the Reds that are show up?
The
first?
Reds are attacking you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they show up and they break through your barricade using like a metro train.
Yep.
And I'm like, what a great like imagery for this series is that like it's being used as a weapon.
And that
like,
really helps too, because you kind of, throughout these two games, you have been given a great idea of the scarcity of resources in this world.
Yeah.
So when you see so much ammunition being expended, so many men dying, you're looking at this.
The stakes are high.
If you're like me, you're going, look at all this destruction. Like, there's not a lot of us left, and there's not a lot of stuff left. And we're sitting here expending tens of thousands of rounds of ammunition.
There's flying monsters out there. You guys have so much more to worry about.
Yeah.
It's crazy, and I love that they show up with the tank at one point, and you have to shoot this little tiny part in one of its treads, and it's so cool because if you don't get it right away, like it took me a couple tries to hit it with a sniper rifle, one of your comrades says, "Artyom's not going to make it." I'm like, "Shut up, I got it. Just let me focus." It's such a great moment.
One thing I want to go back to really quick, I think we talked about how like there's not a lot to talk about with this game in terms of like the story, except for like the major beats and like the character driven stuff. I think Last Light, I hesitate to use the word suffer, but like suffered a little bit from maybe the source material not quite matching up with it, because 2033 has an entire book that it bases its plot skeleton off of.
Yeah.
And then 2035 is the sort of inspiration for where Exodus goes.
Yeah, yeah.
And 2034 really is nothing. Like, 2034 is not adapted at all. 2034 mm-hmm. is its own thing. Last Light is kind of this middle thing that they created, I think, to bridge the gap, because they probably didn't want to do Exodus yet, because you didn't spend enough time in the Metro and with these characters to justify then leaving it.
Sure.
No, I think it made perfect sense as a sequel story.
Yeah.
It's just kind of diminishing returns because you've seen a lot of it already.
For sure.
I would still recommend it.
Absolutely.
Well, I feel like if you're going to play this whole franchise, you shouldn't skip it.
Well, just, yeah.
It is not a skippable game. I mean, yeah, all the games not. In this series are completely highly recommended.
Worth playing.
Yes, yeah. Yes, for sure. So with that said, I am pretty much all set with Last Light, unless you guys have anything
I don't really
to add.
Have much to add.
I feel like we should mention the DLCs.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, I didn't play those.
Okay. They were little mini stories. There's one where you play as a red line sniper. I think it was actually called Comrade Sniper.
Okay.
There was another one where you play as a different ranger. I forget which one. And they were just like little side stories that just kind of gave you a little more insight into the different factions and like just other things that are going on in the world.
That's like, I feel like the best way to do DLCs or other stories, you know?
Little
like,
anthology. It's been so long since I've played them. I don't have anything super duper detailed to say about them, but I remember enjoying them because they. I think it's cool too. It almost feels like deleted scenes where they're like, we had this idea for an encounter, but it doesn't fit organically in the game with Artyom, so we just wanted to make this like sniper level.
Yeah.
And like this other thing, and you know.
It makes perfect sense to me.
Before we move on to Exodus, can we talk about the ending of Last Light a little bit? Because this is where I feel like it just wasn't handled with as much, the word isn't
care.
With as much care as the first one. Well, you know how in the first one it's like your mission is to send this missile, blow up Dark Ones. You do it, but it's maybe not the right decision. The second one, I don't like using this too much. The second one feels a little bit more video gamey to me. Anybody else feel that?
A little.
Bad ending is everyone dies and you did it, but you're dead, so there won't be a sequel, but that's clearly not canon.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So like, I don't know if it was handled as well. It didn't really have like that moral tinge to it. It was more like, it was kind of video gamey for me.
I think it tries to get across that you should know about the moral system now because you have throughout the game, you have the young Dark One following you around. He's able to like cloak himself. Basically, I think the way they explain it is that he messes with other people's perception so they don't see him.
Yeah.
He's not actually cloaking like Predator, but
yeah.
he's following you around and he is
dresses
the one
up
who
in
is,
a cute little outfit.
Yeah. He dresses himself up like a kid.
Yeah.
So he can follow you around without having to cloak himself. And
he disguises himself as a kid, like other people see him as a kid.
Well,
right?
At one point you actually see him as a human child too. But he's following you around, and that's actually how they contextualize the morality system in the game, is that he's judging you for your actions, because the endings of the game are either the Dark Ones come to help the Rangers at the end or they don't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they come based on his recommendation.
Yeah.
Because pretty he cool. thinks you're worth saving.
I would like to briefly mention, while we're kind of on the subject, I was showing your brother Nick earlier. The voice acting for the children in these games is really funny. Like, it's very clearly an adult doing a high-pitched voice, and it's so charming.
Yeah.
Just one bullet, Artyom, please.
Yes. So with that said, you either survive or you don't at the end. And
but you do.
Yeah, clearly you do, because there's a third one. Yeah.
So we're going to go into Metro Exodus, which took a lot longer to come out.
I didn't think this would ever come out. Like, I don't know, maybe I just wasn't following this franchise close enough. I thought Last Light just kind of came and went, and then maybe they just weren't going to make another one. I didn't realize Exodus was in development for a while. I thought there was just nothing.
They didn't say much about it until the announcement trailer.
And there was
they kind of pulled the Fallout 4. It wasn't that close to release, but when they announced it, they had like a lot to show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember the trailer, I think it was pre-rendered, but it looked like what the game ended up playing like. Mm-hmm. It was pretty close. And it was hype as fuck.
Like, it was only like a year later.
It was.
Right? It was about a year.
Because Exodus came out what, 5 or 6 years after Last Light came out? Was it, what was Exodus? 2019?
2019.
Yeah.
So, and I remember that trailer, like watching E3 or something, and it was like a very bleak showing besides that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool. I should get into those. Mm-hmm. And it was like a rampaging bear. That's something we didn't talk about. The bear in Last Light is awesome.
Or just the monsters in general, really.
But it, like, there's that kind of ecosystem developing, and you know, you think about the Russian significance of the bear and how you have that mutual respect with it. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
One of my favorite moments is I think it's Bourbon in 2033.
He says, some people call them demons. I call them bitches.
I was like, all right.
This demons game, are the flying ones. I think they're what they the mutated bats, I believe, or something.
Yeah. Essentially gargoyles. Yeah.
A lot of cool.
What's interesting, though, cool, and I brought this up earlier with the moral system, though, is that a lot of the mutants attack you on sight, like the scripted ones, like the moles, are they called Nasalis, I believe, or Watchmen. Yeah. There's different ones. A lot of the mutants, when you're out in the world, won't automatically attack you. Like when you're up above, there's actually a lot of encounters, especially in Last Light, I believe, that you can bypass if you kind of read their growls as like an animal's sign to stay away,
like warning,
rather than what most games are, which is that everything with teeth attacks you automatically.
Yeah.
You can actually avoid a lot of fights that way.
It's just refreshing to see them handled that way.
Yeah.
While we are on the subject of the surface, most of this third game takes place on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is very cool. I would like to start from the very beginning, where there is sort of a conspiracy, where they have been kind of what are they called?
The Hansa.
Yes.
They are the
mercantile.
They are the Merchants Guild. Yes. They're basically the Metro Illuminati.
They've been hiding that there is a somewhat stable outside world that is habitable outside of the Metro, and this is basically the plot of Metro 2035,
there's a world outside of Moscow.
Yeah. And whereas it's this big sort of long intrigue in the book, it is kind of just the prologue of this game. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out about it very quickly. And then I thought it was so cool because I had read the book by that point. I was like, yeah, oh, they're doing this. And then it is really like, It kicks off right away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy.
Well, and the motivation for doing it, at least in the book, if I remember correctly, was that they were afraid that if people knew, too many people would leave, and then the Metro wouldn't be able to sustain itself because they'd created an economy.
Yeah.
And each station needed a certain amount of people to do certain things. And if too many people left to go start a new life, then the Metro would collapse.
Right. There's a lot of kind of underhanded stuff going on. And it's... it's awesome. That whole escape sequence where you escape from the Metro is fucking bonkers.
Yeah.
I mean, the intrigue of the game is like, like Moscow or something was radio jamming its own public so they wouldn't get incoming signal.
Yeah.
Then don't you like accidentally stop the jam or something like that?
Something goes wrong. Like the beginning? It malfunctions.
Yeah.
In the prologue, RTM has been like almost getting himself sick with radiation because I think he got like a signal for like a second.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's been spending too much time on the surface to the point where Anna's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And eventually
getting transfusions. They're like, dude, you gotta stop this.
Yeah.
And then eventually, I believe he accidentally or somebody accidentally like destroys the jammer or like damages the jammer.
Yeah.
And you get like a full transmission. And then everybody confronts. I believe Miller was in on it, right? He knew.
Yes, but in the book, he's like a very bad guy, and in this one, he's like a good guy, like a very like kind of guy you look up to.
Well, because in the book, he's crippled at the end of 2033, I believe, and so he's very just bitter and like
he's like lost his legs. Doesn't he lose his legs in Last Light in the games?
No,
or am I thinking of something else?
No, he's fully intact.
I'm like you now, like where the lore is like blending together. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I love that whole where you the Aurora is the train that you're on for the whole game, and you just kind of like barrel ass out of there. You have to have this huge gunfight.
It's really cool.
And
the shooting in Exodus is a step up.
It's way better.
It's so good.
Extremely
the
tight.
The gunplay feels really
not only
good.
That it looks great. It looked like one of the best looking games of like, because this was pre, you know.
It was one of the first ray tracing games on PC.
Pre this, this was last generation.
Yep. It was.
It looks beautiful. I did want to say before we get too far into the plot, it's pretty cool that this one has like nothing to do with the Dark Ones at all. Like after they were so important in the first two.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought that up, dude. I had in my notes here that it tells a more like humanity story or more like just people to people.
Yeah.
Because now I'm trying to think there's got to be like a movie or a game that has done there's a world outside of our world and now we've discovered it.
Yeah.
I just can't think of one off the
top
of my head.
Well, I mean, if you want a bad movie, The Village.
You know what sucks? You're right.
That's pretty much it, right?
You're right. Yeah. And I thought that was like, I did like the game, but I feel like you guys are a little bit higher on it than me. So I'm going to, I'd like to hit just some very basic points about sort of,
about this one, of
Exodus.
Yeah.
It's so like this, I like how that, you know, I like the intrigue, how there's a world outside of Moscow and you're going to go find a new place to live, but it's, at certain points, it kind of stops feeling like a Metro game and more like they're doing this sort of big open environment thing, and it's not the claustrophobic Metro that maybe, like, I don't want to say that's what the game's all about, but it, I don't know if, like, the vision and the gameplay align for me all the time. But, Beppe, I don't want to detract from
the train
you have us on here.
So to speak.
Yeah, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I think, Nick, did you want to add something?
Initial thoughts about Exodus?
I guess some of my initial thoughts and also kind of a reaction to what you're saying. I can see what you're saying. I think there's enough times where you go into bunkers and like there's the so basically the way the game is structured, not to step on Beppe's shop talk, but like it's structured where you go to like big open hub where there's side quests and like stuff to find, stuff to do. And then like the in-between missions are like linear set pieces.
Yeah.
And there's the one where you get captured by the cannibals.
Yes.
And you have to fight your way out. One of my favorite sections of the game, by the way.
Yeah.
Because you just absolutely wreck their shit. Yep. Like I love how terrified they sound when they realize they've just captured like a bunch of like special forces soldiers.
You just rip it up.
And you just absolutely rip through them.
Yeah.
But it's like, so there's enough sections like that where you go into like mutant infested dark areas.
I just thought like I was very ready for something new after the second one was kind of like doing it again.
That's where I kind of feel like my impasse is, where I wanted something new, but I'm not sure if like the gameplay systems they had in place and how big, especially the desert beach map, kind of turned me off a little. I didn't know if this was aligning.
Well, to me, it aligned very well because it encapsulated the survival aspect pretty perfectly, because I think this we're gonna get into further detail with each one of them, but I thought the first two maps were very much what I'm looking for with an open world game.
Where
you are exploring the map and finding these interesting locations and being rewarded meaningfully. Where you're getting gear that changes the way you play the game. It's not just like, oh, I found some.
It's almost Metroid-esque.
Not just like, oh, I found a couple filters. You do find stuff like that, like little caches occasionally, but then it's like something game changing you go to like a, you know, a bigger base or something.
Yeah.
It has the perfect drip feed of upgrades.
They do the best job, I think, in Exodus about the little drip
because you find like meaningful upgrades, but you can only use one at a time. So it's like you can wear one type of chest piece that has different properties. Like one lets you carry more health items. One lets you carry more ammo. One lets you carry more like throwing weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's balanced pretty well.
And then like, you know, you have weapons that you can mod on the fly, but you can only do certain minor mods in the field. Other time, like other stuff, you have to go to a workshop and like out in the field. One thing I wanted to say, I reviewed this game back when I was writing at Cultured Vultures. I believe it was actually the final review that I did before I stopped writing there. And the first thing, and I believe I said this in the review too, the first thing I thought when I got to like the first hub in this game, after like a couple of hours, was that it felt to me like a mesh of all the best parts of like Far Cry 2 and the Stalker series.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Both of which I'm huge fans of. And also a lot of the Metro developers worked on Stalker previously.
Oh, okay.
And Stalker is one of my favorite, probably one of my top like five games ever. Because you have like all of the diegetic interfaces, you have the map that you physically pull out, you have all of this stuff that, and like the game never takes you out of it.
I forgot in Far Cry 2 they had the map.
Yeah. Far Cry 2 is kind of the lost game that's really fucking good that nobody really talks about anymore.
Yeah, fell through the cracks.
Because of the 3 onward. Four is my favorite, but
yeah.
Like it reminded me so much of like, because I was just so immersed in the world, because at no point do you ever feel like the game is saying, hey, I'm a video game.
Sure.
Here's this video game ass thing you got to do. It's like, no, look at your map. You pull the map out and, you know, hey, you need to like burn that spider web away, and you'd go click with your lighter and burn it away, and you see it physically, you know, the game always keeps you in the physicality of the character in the world.
Yeah. Something that I thought was interesting, we were talking about upgrades. I like how some of them are missable. Like, you can't get, you don't have to get everything when you're exploring, which I thought was neat. It's not just handed to you.
And it doesn't hurt you either. Like, they don't say, like, oh, you don't have this gun? You can't beat this boss. It's like,
I actually ran into a roadblock that I wanted to bring up that was very tense for me because I didn't have a good save. Was the part, I guess we're going to get into the first map here, which is the Volga. I guess it's like kind of during springtime.
I believe so.
You know, it's some things are thawing out. And Anna, who is now your wife, she falls through a hole into like an old bunker or something. And it's very, it kind of kicks off the plot of the rest of the game. It's very irradiated. And I was down there and I didn't have much filter time left. And there wasn't, I think you find one down there or something. And it was like you're surrounded by the humanimals or whatever. The strange, I guess they're like ghouls from Fallout.
Yeah,
they're
basically just irradiated, horrible feral humans.
Yeah, and that part was really tough for me because I really had to game it to get out of there. So I guess that's something where you can kind of screw yourself if you're not like super prepared and you don't have like a save.
You almost soft lock yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that was a tough part for me. But overall, I really enjoyed that map.
Yeah.
Especially like the church and the starfish.
Yeah.
Which was ripped up. Was the horrible game we just played.
Resident Evil 8?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dog
yes,
shit.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Done much better in this
which
game.
Which itself is reminiscent of 4 with Del Lago.
Yeah. That circle of influence there.
Yeah.
But it's no, like poetry. It rhymes. The stanzas they rhyme. Yeah.
It's a feedback loop. Yep. It's cool because you see it a couple times beforehand.
Yeah.
And it kind of builds up the suspense. Did you have any kind of highlights of that area, you guys?
Of Volga?
Yeah.
I think basically anytime you meet a new character, but also I think my favorite combat encounter on that was actually early on when you first meet Katya, the woman who's being held by the cult.
Yes.
The the basically troglodytes or whatever. The Luddites, the guys that just like hate technology.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you go up into the church tower and you find her and her daughter. You know, she's like, hey, get us out of here. And you're like, yeah, I got a train. I'll bring you back to the train. Because that's basically this whole game is you're bringing upgrades, resources, and other characters back to this train to expand your influence and expand your party. And so as you're leaving, you have like a, you know, encounter with a bunch of the cultists and you can choose to not kill them or kill them or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember I was sneaking around beating a bunch of them up and knocking them out and shit. And then like one of them very briefly turned and saw me. And he had just enough time to cry out before I like crushed his throat. And then, so the other guys all started shooting at me and I was just like, well, shame. Yeah. And so what's cool though, and this is something that they introduced in this game. I don't think the other games did it. They would surrender. But this was one of the first times I really had like a good
that
moment
was,
where the enemy surrendered.
That was a big point there. Yeah.
Cause I think there was like 5 guys left, we'll say. And I think like within 5 seconds just went pop, pop, pop and just killed 3 of them. And the last 2 were like, oh shit. No.
Yeah.
No,
if
no.
You, yeah, if yeah, you intimidate them, and I feel like more games should do
they
that.
They really should.
That's so cool.
And so I was like, okay, they're surrendering. So I went over and just knocked them out and then left. And the game empowers you to do that. And I feel like this game, more than the other two, is a little more lenient because they've expanded the combat system in the open world so much. They're a lot more lenient with the morality points.
I also felt like that was probably a result of like the budget is clearly much higher. They're probably aiming for a much wider audience with this one. And they're going to be a little more forgiving when it comes to that.
Yeah. There's a point later on that I'll talk about when we get to near the end of the game where I thought for sure that I had gone over the edge. It tracks the individual morality of each area based on... And then it uses that to determine a character's fate at the end of each area.
Yeah.
And I thought for sure I was going to lose one of them, but I actually didn't. And we could talk about that in a few minutes when we get to that point.
But, yeah, no, I thought so too in a lot of places. Each chapter has that going for it. But in the next area, I believe, is the desert.
Caspian Sea. It's the dried up Caspian
Sea.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very, it's my favorite area of the game. It's very cool.
This is where you and I contrast, I think.
I love deserts. Yeah. So.
I think it's the most fully developed area, for better or worse, whether you like it or not. A lot of like Fury Road kind of vibes because you're driving around a lot. You can play with the AI a lot in this one. It's very cool. Kind of get yourself into
trouble. The faction fight that's going on there is really cool because you have like the
With the slavers?
Yeah. It's the slavers and then like the rebelling slaves and everything. Yeah.
They're picking apart their salvaging this crashed ship. Mm-hmm. And then the Baron is controlling the area. And I thought that was so cool that missable subplot with like the fake
Baron.
The guy kill is actually the fake one and the real one is like sitting on a
lawn chair. He's just chilling
somewhere.
In a lawn chair. Yeah. I found him like just like side questing and I was like,
who are you?
Who is this?
Yeah.
Wait,
like Spider-Man
second.
Meme. Like,
yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Isn't there like a clue with like the radio or something?
Yeah. If you listen to a certain radio broadcast or something, you can pick out that it's like not him or something.
Mm-hmm. I love that, like, because that's just a reward for exploring that is like a story point, and it's cool because it kind of changes your understanding of that. So, Greg, you didn't like this part, really?
No, I think what started to happen with me is I started to sort of see the gameplay loop. And I didn't love how Metro went from being this very tight experience to being like, oh, I'm going to another open area. There are probably going to be side quests. I believe, do you drive a vehicle around the desert?
Yeah, you get a little like Volkswagen van thing.
Not my favorite. Like I kind of liked, I don't know. Also, it's my bias, I think, where I don't know if I've ever brought this up on the podcast. I don't love vehicle sequences in games. I want to be my character. I want to walk around in the boots. Mm-hmm. Like I don't love it because I feel like we're starting to get away from what the mantra of Metro is a little bit too far.
Okay.
Just a little. I mean, I did not. Don't make fun of me. I did not think this game was bad. Mm-hmm. I feel like when I started seeing the loop of it goes from big area to linear area to big area, I started saying, oh, okay, well, this is, I'm going to have a checklist of stuff to do.
A predictable.
Yeah.
I don't want to step on the order of things here, but did you like the Taiga better?
Was that the,
that's the forest?
The crossbow?
Yeah, I did. Because that's a lot more linear.
I thought it was a little tighter.
Yeah.
When we get to the desert, I just thought it was a little bit checklisty. For me, that's just my...
I feel like the way it is that the game opens up a little bit and previews with Volga, and it's like, hey, here's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Then Caspian Desert is like, here's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then it gets smaller again. Mm-hmm. So it goes like tight, bigger, huge, tight,
that's
smaller,
why I feel like I was more partial to the beginning and end of the game.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Personally. I think you've just explained it well. I don't agree, but you've explained it. And that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I
you would like Stalker, I think.
Yeah, I probably would.
It's a series of interconnected smaller areas that you can explore, but it's still like, you know, there are encounters that you are kind of not funneled towards, but
because
the game world is literally alive. It's actually really cool.
This is a Stalker podcast. The freedom of the earlier chapters, that was the summer one. So the fall one is the woods, mm-hmm. Where you get the crossbow. And this is actually, I mean, this is a good area, but it is definitely like kind of a big hallway where it's like you're point A to point B, very linear. And I remember talking to you, Nick, at the time about this is another issue with the morality system is they give you this awesome weapon. And if you want the good ending, you can't use it.
Yeah.
Well, because in every area, what they did a really good job of doing, except in the Taiga area, which is that's what the biome is.
But,
the forest area is there's always a what's the word I'm looking for here? A guilt-free murder faction.
Sure.
In each of just like, you can just fucking grease these guys.
Generic bandits shoot.
Exactly. Yeah. And then in Taiga, they kind of pull that back where there are some guys that you can just kill. But most of your encounters are going to be with the children.
Yes,
they were pretty cool.
Who were like the descendants of a class that was on a field trip.
Yeah,
and there was like there was a teacher who had them out there when like the nukes went off or something, and so they have like diaries and like records of his teachings, and he was the one who taught them how to survive out there.
Yeah,
like, gave them rules and stuff. It's a really cool little bit of lore. And this is actually the part where I thought I was going to lose Alyosha. I believe is the character you can lose in that one. Because, you don't lose him. I think he gets crippled or something.
Yes.
But I didn't. But what I thought was going to happen was the U's going to get shot or whatever, because there's a part when you're in like their little tree village.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of near the end before you fight the final boss.
Yeah.
Which is the giant bear again.
And, I have a funny story about that, but keep going.
So I was kind of, like you said, I was soft locked into a bad save where they hadn't outright detected me, but they knew something was up because they found a body or like a knocked out person.
Yeah.
And so I basically just had this checkpoint and nothing else. And I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
And so I kept trying to just run out because I didn't want to kill any of them.
Right.
And I kept just trying to run. And I, there was one guy at the end, like blocking the only way out with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't make it past this guy.
Yeah.
So I was like, sorry, bud. And I just fucking took him down.
Mm-hmm. I was like,
I didn't get dinged for it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay.
It was one of those things where, cause I didn't get the good ending of either of the first two games, but I was very committed to the non-lethal Batman lifestyle where you're just knocking people out. I'm like, I should have just had fun. Like, if I wasn't going to get the
good
ending,
you honestly probably
anyway.
Would have gotten the good endings of each area, because I killed a lot of folks in this game.
Right.
And as long as you kind of think about, like, just not being a fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
And also, like, this game is a lot, we haven't really talked about the characters very much, but, like, this game is about your, basically your little family.
Your caravan on the train.
Your caravan on the train. You have all your rangers, you have Anna, and you pick up Katya and her daughter.
Yeah.
And her, you know, little kid. You can get her teddy bear from a demon.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That was so cute.
And you have to do, like, a boss fight to get her teddy bear.
Yeah.
But, and it's, like, I loved all the characters in this.
Yeah.
Because of almost, like, the awkward translations and, like, some of the weird deliveries of the English dialogue.
Yeah.
I played through it in Russian too, but I love the English dialogue, and I think all the characters in this have their own special little things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found them all really charming. And
you're just like on a little pilgrimage, escaping from persecution.
Absolutely.
The thing about the I want to talk about the bear boss battle.
Oh,
very
briefly.
Yeah,
Do you remember this? You were messaging me.
I was messaging.
And I was like, I don't know why you're having a problem.
It's so funny. So I don't know if you guys do this. Like I've said this so many times on this show. I consider myself to be very good at games, and whenever, like, if I get any game over screen, I get a little irritated. I like doing everything in one try.
Yep.
But so this is what I do when I game. If I know, like, a hit just killed me, I automatically start and reload. Okay. I never let the death animation play. But in the bear boss fight, there is a scripted death animation, and I kept thinking he killed me. And I was messaging Beppy, hate this fucking boss. How do you do this? Fuck this.
Yeah.
He's not even getting anywhere close to me. I fucking hate this. And I'm like, wait a minute. Is it on purpose? And I said to Beppy, I take back everything. The game is great. Like, I take it back. Because I always start and quick load every game I play because it pisses me off and I just want to redo it again.
Okay.
You gotta let it play out at least once.
I never let things
make sure.
That's really funny.
Just to make sure you're not.
That is something
anything.
I don't necessarily like, though. Is you're doing really well, so here's a scripted sequence where you're not to move on to the next.
Yeah,
part.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, it, you know, like what's? It, I think it's like a JRPG cliche or whatever, where it's like you just absolutely beat the fuck out of this boss, but you're not supposed to kill him yet. So in the
cutscene,
like,
kicks
you
your ass.
Yeah.
The old Genichiro. But yeah, no, I loved that. So basically, the radiation poisoning from earlier is affecting Anna, and over the course of the game, she gets worse and worse. And pretty cool that it ends kind of, you know, you're back in a metro sort of situation in the city in the winter, and you have to go in there with Miller. And I loved that this was such a small scale
kind of thing.
Really cool.
That each of these games play, like, the end game plays out completely differently. And it's like the last one was this epic battle, and this one is like you're looking for medicine for your wife.
Yeah.
And you have to go through, like, the Science Institute with the fucking gorillas.
Yes.
Well, I was like,
the
I was
blind
like,
ones.
Are these librarians? But they're just Harambe's descendants.
Yeah.
It's
if you light
wild.
Them on fire, it's fine. They just die. But no, they're fucking terrifying.
It was a really cool way to sort of as a final level. I don't want to call it an ironic final level, but kind of. You're kind of doing a throwback to the original.
Yeah. I really love the way that whole thing plays out too, where, like, you're in the bunker with the kid Sasha, I think his name is, the little boy.
Yeah.
Yes.
He actually connects back to one of the DLCs too.
I thought one of maybe the first game.
One of the DLCs is called The Two Colonels, and you play as his father. During that metro's downfall.
Oh, yeah.
And then you also play as Colonel Miller simultaneously with Artyom at the end of the game.
That's kind of interesting.
But I love that whole ending area, except for the boat the boat part
yeah,
at the end sure. with those annoying fucking tentacles and shit. Oh, I hated
totally
that part.
About that. Yeah.
Actually, that really part really infuriated me, but I think the ending is kind of a tearjerker.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I honestly, like I was getting misty-eyed. Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite, because if you know if you have enough dudes, they'll give you a blood transfusion and save you, you know, one last time. Because they're making a big deal out of it in the beginning. Like, you keep relying on other people for your blood because you keep getting yourself poisoned.
Yeah.
But you're doing it, you know, selflessly to save your wife. And then, like, if you have enough of your dudes, they will contribute.
Yeah, because you only had one dose of the radiation goo or the anti-radiation goo
yes.
to help her.
Yes. And
because before you even get to the moral consequence, getting out of that place with the medicine, who are you with Miller?
You're with yeah. Miller.
Because he doesn't survive.
Yeah. He sacrifices himself to
yeah,
get you to, out.
Yeah. 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 Because that's kind of tearjerker
like
number one.
It's
yeah.
like a car ride and it's like very. Kind
yeah. You're
of,
in the car with him. That's what it is. I think there's like two doses. He gives you one that's enough for you to survive, but not like you're still going to die later.
And
yeah.
one is for Anna.
One is for Anna. So it's like. He's like, you know, you take this and, you know, you go on. And then he, like, I think you pass out.
Yeah.
And you wake up and, like, you're there, but he's dead.
Right. Yeah. And then, like, when you sort of come to consciousness, you're in the train. And that's where your moral choices come together, where if you saved, I don't know the exact math, if you saved either everyone or enough people, you will survive the ending.
It's like yeah. two but, out of the three.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, I think it's two. And,
I don't think you need everyone.
No.
And this is my favorite kind of ending to this trilogy, is that where you, it's a happy ending if you did it right, but at great cost and very, like, you went through absolute hell to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like a very well-earned happy ending.
It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I would strongly recommend this trilogy. I mean, we kind of spoiled the whole thing. But.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like you do kind of get to the end of your quest, where the goal was you're trying to find a clean or unirradiated place to live.
A habitable place.
A habitable place to live.
Which you do.
You end up finding it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
Which is really nice.
Yeah, I guess I would maybe... If I were to grade these games,
oh sure, we in final thoughts grades. Yeah, we should. We're up against it. We should get into grades.
Can I briefly just mention the other DLC for?
Yeah,
Exodus?
Sure. Why not?
It was called Sam's Story. One of your Rangers is a man named Sam. He was a U.S. Marine at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow when the nukes hit.
Mm-hmm.
He actually joined the Rangers and became Colonel Miller's bodyguard.
Got it.
He's one of the cooler characters in the game.
He's voiced by the guy who does, he's on the Logic albums, narration on Logic's albums.
And he, so you play as him in Sam's Story, because after the end of Exodus, he decides he wants to try to go back to America. Because
oh, okay.
He hears rumors that his father might still be alive in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to go to San Francisco. And you end up in Vladivostok, which is a coastal city on the East Coast.
Yes.
And there's mm-hmm. a submarine there. And there's a guy, there's an American there who says that they're going to America with this submarine and he'll take you.
Got it.
And you have to do some stuff for him.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's like, who is this guy and how did he come across this submarine and like all this stuff? And the new area is really cool. It's kind of reminiscent of the Volga a little mm-hmm. bit. It's like that same sort of like coastal area,
yeah.
like waterlogged. You get a boat. Sam plays the harmonica instead of the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool. You get a lot of harmonica songs. You can just chill. New weapons, really fun. There's a new handgun and a new rifle that are really fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a nice, tight little, maybe like 6-7-8 hour
okay.
DLC story. Highly recommend it. Highly recommend the two colonels, Tearjerker, that one too.
Mm-hmm.
And because you know how that ends for both of them.
When he finally gets to San Francisco, he meets the mutant Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah.
That's the real twist at the end.
I mean,
well, hi, Sam.
Now that we're up against it, you guys want to do quick, because the new trend on the season is we're grading.
Yeah,
so grading.
For me, I do letters.
Letters?
I mean, for okay. Beppe, yeah, you do numbers. Did you want to give us your grade for the franchise as a whole or individual games? What did you want to do?
I would say like 8-7-8.
Okay.
Something like that.
Oh, are we doing like Olympic scores for yeah. the judges give all the numbers?
Exactly.
That's a really good question. It's, you know what? I might give you the same response. For me, it's probably the same, like 8-7-8 or 8-6-8, maybe something
yeah,
like that.
Like your B and C.
Yeah. So let me think. I tend to grade things. For me, it's like B, C plus and B for me, probably. Nick, you want to go ahead?
2033 is, I think an 8.
Okay.
Maybe 8.5.
Okay.
8.5.
Okay.
Last Light is a 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
And Exodus is, I think I gave it a 9.
Okay.
Nice. When sure. I reviewed it. So I would say a 9 still.
Thank you guys for taking the time to talk about Metro. Really cool trilogy. A trilogy I really just stumbled upon, didn't expect. You guys read the books. You're very knowledgeable.
Highly recommend the books, too. Very depressing, so be ready. But,
yeah. Nick, thanks for joining us once again. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Love being here.
And we will see you guys next time on Goddamn GameCube. Thank you so much.